Hey everybody, welcome to Making It. This is episode 124, and I'm Bob Claggett, here with David Picciuto.
Hey, Bob Claggett.
Hey, David Picciuto, how are you?
Very good. Hey, Jimmy Duresta.
We also have Jimmy Duresta.
What's up, guys? We made it. We made it here on time.
Well, we almost survived. On time.
Yeah.
Where's our spreadsheet?
No spreadsheet. What's going on?
Right now I'm working on a bandsaw. I don't know if you guys know, but I have a book on making bandsaws and bandsaw boxes. I'm not making a bandsaw.
Really? Yeah. I missed this book about making bandsaws.
I've been rushing all day and I'm still coming down from being driving all over the place. But yeah, so I'm making a bandsaw box and it's the one that's on the cover of the book. And we thought it would be cool to gift that to the people we're buying the house from. We haven't moved into the new house yet, but they're inviting us over to our house next week for a glass of wine, and I thought I would gift them a bandsaw box.
That's cool. On both your parts. That's pretty awesome of them to invite you over before you actually...
We met them at closing, and they're very emotional about leaving the house, and they seem like really amazing, awesome people.
That's really sweet. I made friends with the guy I bought this house from. We still talk all the time.
Oh, nice. Nice.
Yeah, John. Well, I didn't know him at all. He actually knew my dad, but I never had met him ever until I made a bid on the house. And we stayed friends. And that's 13 years now we've been hanging out.
We found out a little bit of history about the house when we closed, where the guy that built it, and he built it for himself, but he owned a chain of grocery stores here in town. And so we tried to do a little bit of research on this grocery store, and it turns out they had their own line of olive oil that they kind of relabeled. And we were able to track down some art dealer in New York City had a hand-painted label of that olive oil company from here in Toledo.
Genco?
What's that?
Genco?
I don't know what Genco is. Is that an art dealer?
No, that's an oil company, from The Godfather.
No, it is not. But we were able to track this painting down, and we bought it, and we're going to hang it in the kitchen. So the guy that built the house who had this company, we found a label of his olive oil that's going to hang in the kitchen. It's a cool
that's
story.
That's really cool.
Yeah.
Sweet. I met the guy that we bought this house from. He just happened to be here, like when the realtor brought us through to show us the house. And he just jumped in and was like, "Oh yeah, let me show you this, and let me give you the history on this." And it was super cool, and he was really nice. And we went into the backyard, and hanging on the fence was a mast for a sailboat, like a small sailboat. And I said, "Oh, is that a mast for a Hobie Cat, like a catamaran?" And he said, "Yeah, how did you know that?" And I was like, "Well, my dad's always wanted one. You know, it's something that he's always been interested in and everything." He said, "Oh, yeah, well, the rest of that boat is at the house that we are moving to, and I'm going to sell it." And I was like, "Oh, can I buy it for my dad? That'd be awesome. It'd be a way that I could, you know, like surprise my dad with a boat, right? Something he would..." And because, I mean, they're not huge. It wouldn't be super expensive or anything. And so he said, "Yeah, that'd be great. Actually, I'll just give it to you." And I'm like, "What?" So like a week or so after we closed on the house, he invited me out to their place and gave me this catamaran on a trailer. And, you know, it needed a little bit of work, but it totally floated and everything and had everything it needed, and just gave it to me. And I gave it to my dad. It
was super amazing. Cool. Yeah.
Yeah. It was awesome. Anyway. Jimmy,
talking about houses, I don't know if I mentioned this because it happened moments before I got on the podcast with you guys a few weeks ago. I was in my garage out here at the house, and Willie called me and said, "Someone's here to meet you." Did I mention this story? A guy named George walked up.
Oh, he said, yeah.
I don't know if I mentioned it on the air. He was born in this house in 1939, and this is the first time he had been back since 1962. So he walked me through the house and explained all this old stuff. It was really, really wild. He was really nice. His in-law across the street had passed away, so he was coming to the house. But he said when he left this house in 62, he never came back until this moment.
Man.
And I walked him around and I showed him stuff I dug up out of the yard, which he remembers as a kid, the old water pump and all kinds of weird stuff. It was cool. So he said he's going to come back and have dinner, and we were going to kind of do a detailed like history lesson on the house. So I'm looking forward to that.
Oh man, it adds so much more value when you know the history of something.
Yeah. It's really sweet. What am I up to? I'm just, Lincoln made arrangements to give me a piece of equipment It's a very big, heavy generator that they sell for welding out in the field. It's called a Ranger 250. And I never heard from them. They said they were going to send it to me in like March. And I just assumed that, you know, like a lot of times you get gifted stuff from companies and it just kind of falls through the cracks. And you don't want to complain. You just keep your mouth shut. You go, whatever. If it shows up, it shows up.
Where's anyway, my free thing?
Exactly. So it was sitting at the distributor all this time. Taylor went there the other day to get a can of oil, a can of gas from them. And they're like, oh, wait, we think this belongs to your boyfriend. Anyway, so I just went and picked that up today. They had the wrong phone number for me. And they just said, we figured you would just come in eventually. So that's why we didn't seem like a rush. And that's exactly what happens. But it was almost 3 months later. So I picked that up this morning. It weighs thousands of pounds and comes with a trailer to pull behind a car. And do you ever drive down the highway and you see those things that have like lights on them that stand alone, just running with lights sticking off of them for like the road crews? It's usually like a little trailer. It's like a big little doghouse looking thing with a light set of lights on it. Basically one of those, but made by Lincoln Welding. So I picked that up today and I assembled the rolling cart for it. I've been doing that since about 11 o'clock and I just ran over here to meet you guys. So doing that, organizing the shop, and I started working on a little video. It's a promotion for graphicstock.com where I plasma cut out this little guy, this welding guy I took off their website. And I'm going to actually turn that into an independent video. So I was going to work on that today, a little sign for my shop. And it's like a little guy with an anvil. It's like a real sort of, looks like a communist graphic.
Yeah, it looks like propaganda. I saw it. That's the first thing I thought of. Yeah,
it looks like propaganda art. Well, if you look in there, if you Google anything, it seems like the same artist makes all that stuff on graphic stock for like any subject matter. So I just Googled industrial or working man, and it looks like the same artist made them all. But they're really cool. It's a great starting point. So I was able to kind of make this graphic of this metal, and I cut it out. And anyway, so I'm going to work on that after we talk today. And so just moving everything along slowly. I get a little overwhelmed with the move, and you guys are going through it now. And I just feel, I feel a certain sense of relief if I know that I moved everything a little bit every day. I said that, you know, like it's like when you're walking up a really steep hill in San Francisco and you've walked all day long, and you just take little tiny baby steps. You feel like at least you keep doing that. You're like resting while you're still moving. You guys ever do that?
Yeah, that's a good analogy, actually.
You're like going slow enough to at least collect your thoughts. Yeah, so it's been one of those weeks. And then tonight I go back to the city, and the city's emptying out. I don't know if you saw my latest vlog. It's getting there. And I got to maybe tomorrow pick up a couple big machines. Oh, and I don't know if I could announce this, but...
but I'm going to anyway.
No, all I'm going to say is that I might... until it's actually done and taped in the can, I was invited to be a guest on a TV show that's a pilot. So that's why I don't know if I could announce it because it's not a real, with a very prominent YouTuber we all know. So I'll just leave it at that until I get the okay. I'll say it next week.
Cool.
If I can say it. Yeah, cool. She got me on the show, so it was really cool.
Well, we'll talk after the podcast and get all the juicy details.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, I'm going to be like, it's just a quick guest appearance as a judge. So I'm going to judge something quickly on... this week. So I'm looking forward to doing that, just solidifying the details. And that's it. Just moving along. It's so nice to work in a big open shop. And I'm like, if you took a warehouse and like plopped it in a desert and then I get to go there and work, that's how isolated I feel. There's nobody around me at all. Oh. Nobody. I'm like 100 yards from the road. And I was there last night at 2 a.m. to work, and I left the door wide open. And one car passed in the 2 hours I was working.
Whoa. Okay, now here's a question for that. Does that bother you at all? Is there any part of you that's like, what if I cut off my finger again? Or what if, is there any part of you that's worried?
Honestly, I'm very cautious of doing anything dangerous alone. If you saw my latest vlog, I moved that big thing alone. And I just said, you know what, if any of this falls or it gets, you know, to a point where it's going to hurt me, I just make sure I stay out from underneath it. If it falls, you know, I'd rather the machine get hurt than me get hurt. So I'm absolutely super, super cautious. But doing stuff like that, I typically do like to work when Willie's around or if Taylor's there, just in the event that I do get injured when I do risky stuff. But last night I was just organizing. I wasn't really cutting anything. So, yeah, I wouldn't be like, you know, doing any risky operations that late alone. So it is a consideration. It has crossed my mind. Like, you know, I'm about to lift this 2,000 pound piece of steel. What if it lands on my foot and traps me there and I can't even get to my cell phone, you know?
Yeah.
It's like I'm making extra sure nothing, like if it falls on the ground, like where will it fall? You know, I'm making all these kind of chess moves just to make extra sure I'll be safe.
The reason I kind of brought that up is because, like, I always put in my videos, I'll have a list of all the things I used and the tools I used and stuff. And at the bottom, I always put a first aid kit, a clotting sponge, and, like, you know, like eye protection, ear protection and stuff. Just, it's just always in there. And I did a sewing video this past week and I had a first aid kit. And so somebody commented, like, oh, did you, like, cut your finger with a needle or something? Because there's a first aid kit in there. But it's just one of those things that I think a lot of people don't think about when you're working in a shop by yourself, whether it's in your house or out in the middle of the desert or whatever.
Absolutely. That's one of my biggest fears when Taylor's here alone, because she's, I mean, she probably won't mind that I announce this now. It's already 3 months later. She cut her leg with a chainsaw a couple months ago. And, she's okay. She got about 15 stitches and, but stupid move. She wasn't even cutting. The chainsaw was idling and she let it bump the side of a leg. Mm. And, you know, I taught her, like, always snap the guard forward when you're not using it so the chain doesn't freely spin. Anyway, it was just an honest, stupid mistake. She says she's probably never, ever going to use the chainsaw again. But she was here with Willie, and so her and Willie went to the hospital. It wasn't so severe that, you know, she lost any mobility. It just was a flesh wound. It didn't cut muscle or anything, but that's one of the biggest fears. Because I said, she's like a little kid alone in a house. Like, you don't know, she's going to climb on the counter and knock the refrigerator over onto herself or something. But, you know, in her world, that's like trying to move something heavy that is annoying her. Or, let me cut this branch down. Jimmy doesn't care if I use the chainsaw. I said to her, I was away, actually. It was when I was in Ohio. And she said, how do you start these chainsaws? I was like, please don't use the chainsaw. And when I pulled back, it was when I was in Atlanta. And when I pulled back up to the house, like, Willie came over to me and he goes, don't be upset, but you caught a leg pretty bad. I was like, uh-oh. So I went in the house and she's like, with a leg up with a big bandage, smiling like a dummy, you know, like, oops. Anyway, it could have been a lot worse, but that's one of the big fears. I always say, do not get on a ladder. That's the other night I was in the shop and I was like, should I get on a ladder that's 30 feet in the air or should I throw a rope over and then pull the chain up? I was like, you know what? I'm not getting on a ladder 30 feet in the air. God forbid I should fall and I end up, you know, incapacitated on the floor. You know, so I never like getting on high ladders when I'm alone. My uncle, he's an uncle, not by blood, but by family, who died that way. He fell off his ladder in his backyard and died. And he was a very stubborn man and you couldn't tell him what to do. And his wife was telling him, don't go up there. Now, there's no reason for you to do this now. And he fell and died. So that's always in the back of my mind when I see somebody inexperienced climbing up a ladder. Is, you know, that's the biggest thing. Don't get on ladders when you're alone.
I wasn't going to bring this up, but now we're talking a little bit about safety. My 90-some-year-old grandfather had kickback on the table saw the other day and sliced his finger open and had to get a bunch of stitches. And he's been using the table saw for decades. And he says he was just doing a repetitive cut. And I didn't really dig in too much to it because I didn't want to shame him or he knew what he did wrong. But it just sounded like, you know, lost concentration for a second and the board kicked back, ran his finger across the blade, and now he has stitches. So even experienced people have injuries. So it's, you know, like Jimmy says, always be present.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I mentioned earlier in that when I was talking about the safety supplies, the clotting sponge, have you guys ever seen these or you know what it is? So it's like a sponge, but when it gets wet, it clots for blood clotting. So it's the thing you would use, like if you lost a finger and blood, you could bleed out in a matter of minutes, that kind of thing. You use that sponge and you put the sponge on it and hold it there and it helps clot the wound on the surface. I've never had to use one of these, luckily, but my understanding is that's kind of a thing that you should definitely have on hand in the shop and know exactly how to get to it and make sure that you can open it with one hand because, you know, if you have 3 minutes of blood worth, you know, in your body or whatever the thing is, and you're bleeding out, that could be the point that saves you. So there's that. Also, you're talking about the ladder thing. A friend of mine used to work on construction sites, and I learned the ladder thing from him because he was, at the end of the day, he was like a foreman or whatever, and at the end of the day, there was one thing above this entryway, so it was at the second level of the house, that needed to be trimmed off, and he was like, oh man, they didn't do that one thing. And he's the only one there. So he goes, puts a ladder up. He's going to climb up, take this sawzall, and trim off this little piece. The battery in the sawzall is dead. So he finds a circular saw. So he takes a circular saw up, and he's cutting this thing on top of a ladder above his head. And it bound on the blade which knocked his, you know, weight backward because he was pushing like with his arms, knocked him backward. He fell off the second story ladder and landed on his back, and the saw came down on him on his arm. And he completely blacked out, and some guys came back to the site or something and found him in like 30 minutes, and he was cut, but he was okay. But he was like, after that, nope, I don't do any work. Like, my guys do the work. I just tell them what to do. If it doesn't get done in time, it doesn't get done in time. But
right, that's it. It's always like you really, like in that half view, you don't always weigh all the options. I mean, now in my old age, I like to think that I do that much more often than I used to. I'd be like, oh, I got to go do that. And now I'm like, wait a minute. Okay, I'm alone. Ladder's a bit rickety. I'm leaning against something that's not totally level. Forget it. I'll deal with it another time.
Yeah, for sure.
Or a different way. Yeah. But I was going to say, I had a close friend that was a doctor. We lost touch, but one thing I learned from him that he told, he always repeated this. He said, when somebody's injured and they're bleeding, he said, just put pressure on it. Get a rag and put pressure on it. And the reason he brought that up is there was an incident where somebody bled out to death because they had cut on the inside of their thigh from an accident. Somebody, it happened in our neighborhood. We didn't know the person, but he said, if somebody there on the scene just knew enough to just put pressure on his femoral artery, the person would have lived long enough for the ambulance to get there. Mm. But there's seven people standing around watching this guy bleed to death. They don't know to just reach down and put pressure on that cut.
Yeah.
And that's something my dad taught me too. My dad was a FDNY paramedic when I was a kid. So he also said that to us when we were little. He said, if anybody ever gets a bad cut and they're bleeding a lot, just get a rag or just put your skin and just put pressure right on that where the blood is coming out. If you just hold pressure on that until paramedics get there, the person has a likelihood of living where it's only minutes before they pass out and die. If you don't do that. So he said, it's just a simple thing. Just put pressure on it. Hmm. And when I cut my pinky, the first thing I did is I just grabbed it and I just held my hand tightly to keep the blood from continuously coming. I mean, it kind of coagulated by the time I was up at the hospital. But those first 10 minutes, I was just like, I just held pressure on it.
Yeah. So be careful in the shop if you're by yourself. Yeah. I mean, I think about that a lot, you know, because I work either when my kids go to bed and my wife's at like derby practice and I'm essentially the only one home, you know, I'm not really the only one, but, the kids are asleep. And when I'm down in the shop at night, I think about that a lot. Just, you know, like what would happen if, I don't know, if I cut something or if I fell and just knocked myself out, like nobody's going to find me for at least a couple of hours, you know? So I have to kind of weigh the risk. Anytime you're in that situation, you need to think through that stuff. But anyway, all of that. I was just curious if you had ever thought about that stuff, being in your shop. You're talking about being in a desert working, you know, by yourself. And I'm like, well, that sounds like a pretty dangerous place to be.
It didn't occur to me right away, but I absolutely did have the consideration, and I have, and I've done just the other night. I was like, I'm not getting on that ladder. I'm alone. You know, if Willie was here, I'd do it, but I'm not doing it when I'm alone. And, you know, I wasn't thinking about that, but that's what made me think about it later. But yeah, but it's nice. It's peaceful. I just have NPR on all the time, and it's great. The only reason I listen to NPR is because it's the only thing that comes in on the radio that's there. It's a horrible reception. Like, my phone doesn't ring 5 inches inside the doorway to the shop. So I leave my phone on the hood of my car, parked 10 feet away from the entrance of the door.
Oh, yeah.
The other day, my phone was like 300 degrees.
It's a big metal building, right?
Yeah.
It's probably like a giant Faraday cage. It just like stops everything from coming in.
It's exactly like the radio works outside the threshold, not inside the threshold. Literally, like, and all it gets is NPR anyway.
Crazy. So,
yeah. And then if I do try and do a Bluetooth to the, I got a DeWalt radio. So if I do a Bluetooth to the DeWalt radio, I got to leave my phone out in the car, like 10 feet past the door. And then it rings and I got to run to my phone to get it's a technological headache.
Yeah. Well, for me, I've been on vacation. Yep. And remember how we were talking about how vacations are difficult sometimes?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I ran into that. I mean, it was a good time. We had a good time with family. And, you know, we went down to Florida, where my wife's from, to see her family and spend some time there before we move, you know, just to get a good solid trip in. So it was good. We did some fishing and canoeing and went to the beach and stuff. But, you know, in those moments where, like, we're all sitting around hanging out, and the kids are watching cartoons, and my wife's talking to her family, and I'm just sitting there like, I need to go make something. So, but it was good. But we got back today at 1 o'clock, and then I had, at 2 o'clock, I got on and did the newest episode of Wood Talk with Matt and Mark. That was a lot of fun. And then last week before we left, I made a bathroom light fixture. Really simple light fixture. It's just like a long rectangle with four bulbs in it. But basically, you know, in getting our house ready to sell, all the different stuff in the house that I've never wanted to get around to doing, I now have to do in this like 80s, you know, awful bathroom light was still there. And so I was like, 9 years, it's long enough. I need to replace it. So I did. So that'll be out this week. But that's pretty much what I've been up to. Traveling, driving. And tons of crazy rain down here. So like we've been driving through rain for several days, but you know.
Did you find yourself on the computer doing work stuff on vacation?
A little bit. I tried not to. I mean, I did some in the car on the way there and the way back. And then one night, I have a project that I had to design so that I could start on it tomorrow. So I spent one evening pretty late, you know, working on that. But I tried not to. You know, I tried to be there and not work, not do email stuff and hang out with the kids. And it was good. You know, like I didn't have to go out on a canoe by myself one night, but I did. And it was awesome. So glad that I took that instead of like sitting down and answering emails because it was just, it was worthwhile. You know, caught a fish.
I saw the glass bottom boat. I want to do that someday.
That place was amazing. It's called, oh gosh, Salt Springs. I don't know. Everything in Florida is either named Springs or Park or Orange or Green. It's someplace down there. It's where they filmed a bunch of movies. And so that was kind of cool. But you go out in this glass bottom boat and they just go through this clear, super clear water. And you get to look down and you see like gar and all these fish and we saw an alligator and we saw a bunch of turtles and there's people swimming and kayaking in it and stuff right next to the alligators. People are crazy. But yeah, that was really cool. Cool place. But what are we going to talk about this week?
If there's time left, I wanted to talk about how software affects what we do or influences what we do. Or we're going to talk about software. Yeah.
Software. Well, actually, when I was on Wood Talk earlier, somebody asked a question about SketchUp versus some of the other like more complex 3D software like Fusion and Rhino and these other things. And the question that came up was like, is SketchUp, what did they say? Is SketchUp for sissies or something like that? Like, is it too simple for what people are doing these days? And the question was really in regard to CNC work, I think. But I'm curious. Do you? I know we've all used SketchUp for different things. And I think Jimmy, you use a lot of Fusion these days. But like, do you still have a place for all of those different pieces of 3D software?
I personally never got into SketchUp. I mean, let me just the disclaimer. It's all frustrating to me because I never really got good at it. I wish that I had a full time tutor that I could just like leave in the closet and then pull out when I want to work on something because I get so frustrated. It'll be expensive. Just wait here. I'll talk to you in 15 hours. It gets so frustrating for me because I just like get backed into a corner and then I run a fake, you know, I run a simulation and I'm like, forget it. I'll just forget it. You know, like I joked in my Fusion class last time I took it and I said, every time I ran a simulation, I just said, screw it. I'll make it out of wood. And everybody laughed. And that's really my emotional feeling every time like I run a simulation and it doesn't work out right. Or I'm trying to build a model and every part shows up except for the one part. And I can't figure out how I work in Fusion and sometimes my model just turns off and I can't figure out where it went. And I just start over. I have no, like, and I go back to that original file and all of a sudden it's there again. I'm like, where did it go? It drives me nuts. So I am a little frustrated with all of it. You know, I need to really, I've started five projects. As I say, I need to focus on a project, but I'm doing a collaboration with a YouTuber, a successful YouTuber. I'm working with like three different YouTubers right now and none of them have given me 100% okay to announce who they are or what we're doing. And it's really just a matter of timing for videos. It's not that they don't want to be involved and I don't want to make promises for anybody unless they're willing to do that for themselves. So that being said, I'm working with somebody on a project and I made the sketch models. We might actually have a good partnership with me coming up with concepts and me doing the sketch models like in real modeling, real plastic and sending him pictures. And then he models it. And he said, I was very surprised. He says, I don't use Fusion. He goes, I use SketchUp for everything. He goes, I don't know why anybody would use Fusion if SketchUp it works so well. And I was really surprised because he's very, very, very skilled. And if you've ever watched the work he's done, which many of us have seen it, you wouldn't assume that, you know, he probably is using Fusion like the rest of the world. But anyway, I was surprised. He said Fusion, I guess, oh, Fusion is garbage. I was like, oh, really? I mean, I don't know. What do I know? To me, it's all Greek. I can't figure any of it out. So he's using SketchUp. And then there's a couple friends of mine that only use SketchUp because they haven't been exposed to sort of the maker community that we're all in. They're totally outside of YouTube and what we do. They're just professionals making stuff, and they just use Fusion, and that's all they use. And I mean, should I say SketchUp, and that's all they use. But yeah, that's it. I mean, It's all frustrating to me. Like I said, if I can just get somebody like this collaboration that's working right now, if I can get that to carry on to the next project, and the two of us continuously make products together, that would be awesome. Because I do what I'm good at, and that's coming up with ideas. And he said he can do all the technical stuff. Just coming up with ideas is not what he's good at. But the collaboration that we've had in this past test has been amazing. Like, we pick each other's brains, and you know, we definitely fill in each other's gaps when it comes to like the design process. And so, sorry, I can't say more about that collaboration just yet. But it's good. We haven't finished it yet. He's working on a video, and once the video is done, I'll definitely put segments of it in my vlog, because it's not, for me, it's not a full video. It's just a couple of concepts. And but yeah, it's really convenient to have somebody that knows how to do it, so I can continue to not learn it. But I must say, like, that for me is frustrating. I'll say this and then I'll let you guys talk. I was using Windows, using my Torchmate programming software, and that I figured out, and I'm able to troubleshoot the machine, and I'm able, like yesterday I was having problems with the cut I was doing on Instagram, and it's like the guy with the anvil, and it wasn't working, and I'm like, oh, let me try this action reaction. Oh, that works better. Okay, now I got to remember to always do it that way when this problem happens. So some technology sticks, some just comes in one finger and out the other.
So I have a question about that. So that specifically is one piece of software to work, to run one piece of machinery, right?
Yeah.
Okay. So when you run into those things that you think like, you know, I have to remember every time to do this thing. Do you have a checklist? Are you recording that stuff somewhere?
We talked about it, and my friend Jason, you sent me a checklist for the Tormach to go through, and I just haven't been that involved. You know, like I still need more experience with the machine. Just before I hit start on the plasma cut, I said, okay, before you hit start, what are you forgetting? I literally, like, in my mind, I don't have a physical checklist, but I went in my mind, I'm like, okay, you got to set this, you got to set that, you got to do this, set the home, do this. And I went through all the, and I'm like, that seems too simple. I think I'm forgetting something. Ah, screw it. And I hit start. And it stalled. There was a problem. And I realized, this is a technical thing for the plasma cutters, the plasma cutter arc feels the metal. So when it doesn't have metal underneath it, it stops. It's like, wait a minute, I can't feel the metal. That's when I have auto, it's like auto height gauge on. So it blows out an arc into a hole, and then it stops to come back onto that hole because I'm making a really extreme, like, for instance, like a big long arrow. I go forward and then come back. So the anvil man I made has lots of little sharp cuts in it. And with the auto on, when it comes back on itself to make that very acute cut, there's not enough metal for it to feel it, so it shuts off. It's like, wait, I don't feel the metal. So when you turn auto off, it just follows the vector. And the reason you would have auto on is for the metal to be higher and lower. But since I'm cutting a thick plate, there is no variation in the height, so I can just leave auto off.
Gotcha.
So, I mean, like I said, you start to learn these nuances the more you make mistakes. And I haven't even begun on the full spectrum laser, David. So that's why you haven't been getting phone calls from me yet, because I haven't even begun. I got the software downloaded, and we'll talk after about that.
So when I was in art school, I'm sure you had to do this too, I had to take a bunch of art history classes.
Yep.
A bunch of, you know, and it was like, you got to remember the artist, the piece, and the year that it was done, and, you know, at least, and then there's a bunch of other ancillary information you need. And the way that we got through, me and one of my good friends, the way we got through art history was to make up songs. And so we would come up with, like, a little short little ditty to put the pieces together, so that anytime we needed to know, like, something fresco so-and-so. And it was, you know, and we had these little ditties we could sing, and it was a bunch of short little pieces that would just...
Can you remember any of those songs now?
I can't remember them now, because that was a very long time ago. But anyway, that may be really silly, but it was a way for us to, like, just take little pieces, enough for us to get the context of what we were, you know, talking about, to get it back in our brains. And so we'd make up little songs to put pieces of information together. So you may want to do that. Make yourself a little Torchmate song.
Hmm. I have a song that I sing to myself every time I leave the house, and it's called Keys, Wallet, Phone.
How's it going?
Oh, right on.
I don't feel comfortable doing this.
Your guitar is right behind you. Grab it.
Moving on.
Okay. Yeah. So, as far as like that software, I have trouble with that. And the reason I asked about the checklist, because with 3D printing stuff, if I'm doing a whole bunch of 3D printing and, you know, for like a certain project, and I spend a lot of time in it, I get all that stuff kind of in the front of my brain, and I remember to check the right boxes and set the right things and whatevers and whatevers. But then if I haven't done it for a while and I come back and try to 3D print something, I'm just like, oh yeah, I know how to do this. This is easy. Throw it in the machine and it starts printing in midair. And I'm like, ah, I forgot something. So I have to kind of make myself a list of stuff to check, you know, sometimes if I'm doing specific operations. But anyway.
Yeah, I've been using SketchUp for a while now, but it still frustrates me because I've been using Photoshop and Illustrator for almost 20 years, which sounds insane, but I've done the math and I graduated college in 2000, so it's been almost 20 years, and I'm pretty comfortable in those two programs, but when I get to SketchUp, I don't feel comfortable, and I always I'm like, am I doing this right? I have Snap set up, so it snaps to like quarter of an inch, but I still find my measurements are in 16ths and 32nds. Like, why is this measurement should not be this. This frustrates me. And so lately I've been trying to get into Fusion 360 a little bit more because there's benefits. Where we talked about, I forget what the term is called, but you can say, you know what, I'm changing everything from 3/4 inch thick to 1/2 inch thick. And then it automatically like fills that out throughout the entire project without any extra work. You can't do that and SketchUp. And Fusion 360, you can output a flat pack to the CNC and have it cut everything out. You can't really do that in SketchUp unless there's some sort of plugin. And so I'm trying to remove myself from one frustrating program to another one, because these 3D programs, they just don't work like other drawing programs, and it's like, oh, it feels like I'm starting from scratch.
I'm real comfortable with Illustrator, so I'm always trying to figure out how I could start an Illustrator, then bring it into Fusion and extrude it, or bring it into SketchUp and extrude it. So making that initial drawing, I'm always more comfortable at least starting an Illustrator than exporting that file.
Yeah.
Yeah. Do you think that's like an immersion thing, where if you just stayed heads down in SketchUp for like a month straight, you would be totally comfortable with it? Or
of course.
Or does it like... Do the key commands and stuff conflict with what you would do in Photoshop and Illustrator? Because I know that's been...
Yeah. The key commands definitely conflict. And that drives me nuts. And after I start using the program for a few minutes, you know, the right key commands enter my brain and I'm able to do what I'm doing. But it's usually that, you know, I'm hitting the space bar. I'm like, oh, the space bar does something totally different in this program. And yeah.
My thing with Fusion, I love the extensibility of it, and I love the parametric nature of it, you know, where you can like tie the length of this face is always 3/4 of the size of this face or whatever. And you can set that stuff up, which is fantastic if you set it up. But if you don't set it up, it's a worthless feature because you can't really go back and do it. So if you don't do it in the first place, you know, if you're not thinking ahead a little bit about how things are going to need to relate, then that whole power is kind of lost.
Yeah.
And I have not gotten myself into that habit yet where I'm making, because I'm just thinking about like getting the shapes that I want and getting the sizes. And I'm not really thinking about, well, eventually, if I want to be able to scale this stuff, you know, in a certain way, I have to think about it now and put those kind of instructions in place.
And I would just want to expand on that a little bit, that what's that term called?
Parametric.
Yeah. Which is really cool. You can have variables in there, like you said, where it's like, the thickness of this is going to be 1/2 of this. So you can have these variables that are always changing throughout the project. And you can say, if you're building a bookcase, you determine your material thickness at the very beginning, and you can say it's going to be 5 shelves high. So later, if you decide to change the height of it, it will readjust all those shelves, or you could remove and add shelves, and it readjusts the entire project, which is just mind-blowing, amazing what you can do with it.
As long as you put in the work.
Like, as long as you put in the work. Otherwise, it's a worthless feature.
Yeah. Which is frustrating. Like, I've gotten to the end of things and been like, oh, sweet, I can... No, I can't. It's a bummer.
I've gotten to the end of things and said, oh, where the hell did the model go? It was just here 1 second ago. I'm not even kidding.
You've probably lost it. So the tree on the
left... the shop.
The tree on the left, you've probably been, you know, gotten out of order over there or clicked into another level or something. That's confused me a whole lot when I first started using it. Because I would get down to where... You know, it's a tree, so I would end up further down the tree than I should be. So the things that were outside of that were just kind of like not there, or I couldn't edit them correctly or something. And I just had to figure out how to manage like getting through that tree, and then it started working better.
But, Jimmy,
all right, go ahead.
I have a question for Jimmy. Like you, I feel more comfortable in Illustrator. Can you start with a line drawing in Illustrator and then easily bring that into Fusion 360? Because you have to jump through a ton of hoops to make that work in SketchUp. And it's a pain.
Well, I've done it with SketchUp too, painfully. I think you just got to export an SVG file and then import the SVG file into Fusion. And then you could extrude that in, whether it's typeface or whether it's a line drawing of something unusual that would just be easier for you to draw in Illustrator. Yeah, you could, and then you could start from there, and then, you know, on those various surfaces, you could then draw other stuff. But when you bring in an SVG file, you have to, like, unfix it, I think it's called, if it's fixed. I brought in SVG files into Fusion, and then those line segments become 20 line segments instead of one smooth line. So therein lies where I run into problems, because then I want to bevel that edge, and I can't bevel it because I have to select 30 different line segments, and then they all don't know each other. They only just met on the train. They're not really friends, so... They got to actually like hold hands. It's so annoying. These are all the images I make in my head when the computer's telling me this isn't going to work. I'm like, you're right next to each other. Can't you just
get along?
Just get along and work for me. And then I just go make it out of wood.
Yeah.
Was there anything else that you use in the design process besides SketchUp, Illustrator, Fusion 360?
I use this old program I got when I was a little kid. It's called the Ticonderoga pencil and a piece of paper. That's how it works the best. I just texted you guys. Like I said, the audience is going to know exactly what I'm talking about shortly, but I texted you guys the process I just did with my my collaborator, where I made the model and the pencil sketch, and that was a result of the conversations he and I went back and forth on based on my initial idea, and then we ended up with the model that's in the same images.
It's pretty awesome.
Don't get the audience excited. They can't see it.
It's this thing. Just look at it. Look through the speakers. And, so what other than design software, like I know we've talked about like, you know, time management stuff and organization stuff, and I have a lot of opinions on that, but do you guys have anything other than design software that you really like that you would recommend or that you really hate, you think is, you know, shouldn't be used?
that we hate?
Or like or hate, I don't
know. No, you know, unfortunately, we all have to change to adapt. Like I said, like right now, the full spectrum laser is sitting in my shop, like grinning its teeth at me, going, "Okay, whenever you're ready." And I just, you know, one of these days, I'm going to jump in and I'm going to figure it out. But we all have to adapt. You know, like when I look at the arc of my last 6 years when I first started on YouTube, like making little bits and pieces out of brass and scrap wood. And, you know, I've changed, and now I get free equipment, and I only use the computer, and my channel's going down, although I have over 1 million subscribers as my channel goes down. It's just comments I got the last couple of days. Your channel's going down. And then I'm also in a lull because I'm moving the store. But, you know, when you look back at time, it's like we have to learn these things. It's like either sink or swim, you know? It's like Bob Dylan says, the times they are changing. You got it. We have to adapt. And as much as I don't want to adapt, but you know, the best thing is like when I see Tim Sway, like who he's never made any declarations that he's never going to learn CNC, but Tim was just like an earthy dude that was just like in his shop with nails and saws and scrapers and paint. And now he's using CNC machines and he's doing it successfully. And he's in, you know, he's enriching his life and he's having fun with it. It's just another tool, but all these various pieces of software have to interact with almost every one of us in the maker community ongoing. I mean, whether it's 3D printing that we're doing or plasma cutting or seeing, you know, a lot of this stuff has been around for a really long time, but now it's kind of really reaching everybody's workflow. Whereas, like, remember when I was in high school in the 80s, it's like you either pick metal shop or you pick wood shop. Now it's like, do you want to make stuff or do you want to be a bookkeeper? It's like those are the two choices. Yeah. It's like it's not broken down into those categories anymore. And then making stuff involves all this different technology for the most part. You know, it's not like you're not going to see, you know, hand tool guys really jumping too far into Illustrator very quickly. We all have that because all three of us went to art school. You know, that's why we all know Illustrator. But if guys that came from like a traditional, for instance, boat building background, Illustrator to them is like us learning Fusion. Mm. You know, not all the time, but in some cases.
Yeah. So, I am enjoying the trend of browser-based software with these digital fabrication tools. So like Inventables CNC, they have Easel, which doesn't have every feature that you need for CNC, but it's really easy, it's really simple, and it removes that barrier. And the same thing with like the Glowforge, the software that they use. It doesn't have every single thing, but it makes the machine a lot easier to use. And you don't have to spend all that time learning the software. You can just dive right in and start cutting. Or
yeah, I totally agree. I did a video a couple weeks ago on my Glowforge, and that was the most common thing was because the software is cloud-based, it's not, you know, you have to have an internet connection to run it. And so many people were just like, oh, that's a deal breaker. I'm out. And I'm like, okay, well, I mean, I get that. I understand like why that's a negative thing for some people, but at the same time, think about the positive side of that, because you have software that can be updated by the minute. And I've literally, working with them in pre-release, I have literally had a feature that did not work. And this happened with Inventables too on Easel. I had a feature that didn't work. Through the app itself, I sent them a message and said, hey, this thing is not working. And somebody said, hold on a second. And then they came back and said, refresh the browser and try it again. And I did, and it worked. Now, you're going to tell me that anybody that has like down, you know, Adobe can't do that. Any downloadable software that you download has to be compiled. It has to be distributed. It's an entirely different thing. And they both have like positive and negative. But I mean, the fact that so many people were willing to just like throw out the entire notion of this piece of hardware and its associated software because it was cloud-based, I was just like, man, you guys are going to have to get used to this, you know?
No, it's like the new iPhone without a jack. You just, you know, like it's going to change.
No matter, right? Yeah. And I mean,
it
like,
frustrates me. I wouldn't be able to use it until I got internet connection. I can't even get a phone connection in my shop right now. So
yeah. Well, yeah. Like in your case, it wouldn't make sense, right? Because you
I would
have
to use it here in the house. I'd figure out a room in the house. I would just use it here.
Yeah.
If and when I ever got one.
And, you know, there's a lot of places in the world that do not have a reliable internet. And I understand that in those cases, it would not be a good solution. But that doesn't mean it's a bad solution. That means it's a bad solution for that particular place. Mm-hmm. And anyway, regardless of that, like I totally am with you. I love the fact that some of these things are cloud-based and can be updated all the time, can be improved. They're lightweight. They can run on any machine without or any computer without drivers or on your phone. I mean, you can run the Glowforge app from your phone. Mm-hmm. Start to finish, you can laser something from your phone. That's crazy.
Hey, that reminds me of something. Can I ask you guys both something? I know, Bob, you have a drone.
Yes.
Dave, do you have a drone yet?
No, not yet.
Oh, one of the most frustrating things with... I have a Mavic. Do you have a Mavic, Bob?
I have a Phantom 4.
One of the most frustrating things is every single... if I open it today, the very first thing my computer will say is, can you guess what my phone's going to say instantly when I open it? Firmware update needed.
Oh, yeah. Yep.
I take a half hour and do it while my drone is busy trying to decide where it wants to go, because I send it up anyway and then it starts uploading, and then my drone's just like, oh, I think I'm going to go for a ride without anybody's help. That's happened to me. That's like all of a sudden my drone's just like, see you later, I'm going to go for a walk. And I'm like, wait a minute. And I like force land it while it's in the middle of updating. It's like, okay, update it. And I swear to God, 2 days later I open my phone and it says firmware update needed. Mm-hmm. Every single time I open the Mavic, it says firmware update needed. It is, it's like, makes me, every time I go to say, oh, this is a beautiful sunset, oh, I haven't opened the thing in 2 days. You know what? Forget it. This is going to be a hassle. Mm,
yeah.
Is there any way to turn it? It works now. Does that mean it's not going to work in 2 days? Can't I just shut the thing off?
Well,
shut the firmware off? And like upgrade it once a month instead of every 2 days, every 3 days?
Not necessarily. See, that's one of the bad things there is that once you cross that threshold of having a piece of software that can phone home and it's aware that it should phone home, when it can't, it knows it. And at that point, it can stop you from doing anything. I mean, that's definitely one of the big downsides of any of this stuff. And our phones do that. Every piece of software that talks to a cloud-based system can do that. My PlayStation 4 does that. I don't play games very often. But on the one night every 6 months where my buddies are over and I'm like, hey, let's play a game. That'll be fun. And I turn it on and it's like, PS4 update. You got to update your firmware. Oh, okay. Well, that'll take 30 minutes. So I do that. And then the game loads. Oh, there's an update to the game. That'll take 30 minutes. I'm like, oh, come on. By then, the controllers are dead, you know?
Like, why don't they announce it once a month, at least to make it, like, convenient so you have time in between to, like, use the machine?
Yeah. Yeah. That stuff's a drag.
Why isn't it, like, the end of every month be, like, the update day so you know to at least avoid it?
Well, and, like, in the case of the Phantom and the DJI in general, so yours probably this way, too, you have to have an account now to log into the software to fly the drone.
That's annoying as hell.
Made me a little angry because, like, I don't
think...
Same thing
with GoPro, they did that. That's so annoying. I don't need a GoPro account.
Well, but you can take a GoPro and turn it on and off, and it still works.
That's true.
The drone, you cannot use in any way unless you have an account through their website now. And so a friend of mine, who actually just dropped the drone off, he's a wedding photographer, videographer. And so he took the drone, he borrowed it to use for a wedding. And he gets to the wedding and has to text me on my vacation to get my username and password so that he can even turn the drone on to use it for his business. And I'm like, that's a little messed up.
You think that's some FAA regulation type stuff?
Nah, I mean, could be. Who knows? I don't think so, because they actually loosened the FAA stuff recently, so you don't have to register hobby drones now, whereas you did 6 months ago. So I wouldn't think that that would be a condition. But
you want to hear an interesting workaround that I developed, because I got... GoPro sessions. I have them in my car. I use them, like, I mostly have a lot of them so that when the battery dies, I could keep moving along and get the next one. And just so all my footage ends up on various cameras any particular time. I shoot a lot. I don't do multiple camera shots. That's what a lot of people assume. It's just linearly. I shoot on this camera, then that one, then that one. The reason you got to go on GoPro, you got to join an account, you got to sign up. Your stuff somehow gets in the cloud. I don't even know how, but there's footage on my phone from my DJI and my GoPro, which is not saved anywhere tangibly that I know of. But sometimes I open it up, my phone has no space in it. It's because all the stuff is somewhere and I can't find it. That's a whole nother podcast. But the sessions, you can't connect to your phone to see the screen unless you sign up for the app, and you can't change. So I want to go in and change the settings on the session. I want to turn the beep off and turn the blinking light off. The first things I want to do, I want them to be off. I don't want people to hear me start them. I don't want people to see me start them if I'm going to try and do some surreptitious filming somewhere, because people automatically go like, oh, is that filming? Why is that light blinking? So to get a session, you got to join GoPro. You got to go in and you got to change. And then I never go into that app again. Also, you have to go into the app to erase it. So if you fill a session's chip up, you got to go in to your app and say, delete the footage. You can't just do it through the piece of device in your hand. So what I do is I use my other GoPro, which is, you know, any one of my other GoPros that I have, that's like got a screen on the back, and I just swap all the chips out. So one night a week, I'll go in and I'll clean all my chips off. I'll take them all out of all the sessions and one by one put them into a Hero 4 and delete all the footage on them and then put them all back in the sessions. So that's one way of being able to delete the footage without having to go through the session programming.
You just throw them away at the end of every week and buy all new cameras.
I would love to do that, because then they wouldn't have scratches and blasted dots on them from the welder and stuff.
I'm sure GoPro is listening. Can we just make a request to them to make the card a little bit easier to remove? Because you got to have the certain size fingernail to press it down to get it to pop out.
You know... You know what you need?
An ice pick.
You know what you need, right? You need an ice pick. If you saw, I don't have any of the chips handy because all my GoPros are in the car. The back of every one of my microchips is all chewed up. It's all chewed up for me grabbing it with the ice pick and scraping it and scraping it. And not only that, if you push it down and it shoots out, go twink, and I hear it like tumble on the floor of my apartment. I'm like, okay. Whole day's worth of shooting gone, and I gotta like quick and get it before the dog comes and licks it up wherever it is and runs away with it.
My Sony cameras have developed a technique. They use the slightly bigger card. What is that called? micro
SD.
Yeah, the SD card. And the way the door swings open, the card is right by the door. So it's also hard to, like, you press it and then it comes out a little bit, but it's hard to get your fingers in there to pinch it and pull it out. So what I've developed a trick where I press it and then I flick my thumb off of it and it shoots out and I catch it with my other hand.
Nice.
Yeah, it's a fun little game I have to play.
Like I can't remember. Don't do it near the dog. You'll lick it up right off the ground and run away with it.
I can't remember what camera it was, but one of them, I couldn't get the micro SD out very easily, and I ended up just taking a piece of blue painter's tape and wrapping a little tab off the end of it. And that made it, you know, that's flappy enough that you can kind of stuff it into whatever camera, but it was easy to be able to pull it out, so maybe that would work.
That's a brilliant life hack.
There you go.
Yeah.
And you should also contact GoPro about bundling an ice pick, one of a Duresta ice pick with I mean, that's a match made in heaven. A tiny camera and a sharp object bundle.
Yeah. Oh, man.
So we've complained about
software, GoPros.
Software and GoPros for a while. I mean, I've talked about Trello as a like an organization software a bunch of times. I don't really want to rehash that unless there's value in it. But I use that more now than I ever have. We, like my editor and some other people that I'm doing some stuff with, we've set up more boards. We keep track of like brainstorming and scheduling and project needs and where projects videos are, like what stage they're in for editing, or they need voiceover, or they need coloring. It's crazy. And none of that stuff's really necessary, but for me to be able to like open a tab in my browser and see the state of everything that I've been thinking about for the last month is really, really gratifying.
I would just forget the password to that program. I know if I can't remember. I would.
You're not even trying, Jimmy. Come on. Yeah, it's really handy, and it's free, and it's like one of those things that I can't help not telling people about, because it, if it's the type of thing that you like to use, it can be super helpful. You know, maybe it's not for everybody, but for me it is.
Yeah, I've been thinking about getting back into Trello, even though I'm not working in a team environment. I want to go through and I kind of want to organize all my past videos and all my past articles on my website, because there's things to those videos and articles that need updated. So there's plenty of videos where I could go back and I could make plans for that. And so I think if I'm using Trello right, I could have each one of those videos or articles as a card with maybe like a checklist or like in what state it's in, correct?
Yeah, like the way I would do that personally is I would have a list for, you know, if the video is done or if it's currently being worked on or if it needs to be worked on. And then, yeah, a card for each video and then a checklist within that for all the things that need to be accomplished. And, you know, each one of the cards can take comments. You can leave little notes on them, so you can write yourself notes as to what you need to do. Or like when I create a new project, I'll make a card. And then in those notes, I'm writing like it has to be 7 feet long. It has to be used this kind of whatever. And so I don't have to keep track of that stuff in my head anymore. So then when I go to actually design a piece of furniture, I can look at that list and be like, oh, here are all my constraints that I have to work with. Mm-hmm. You know, nice. I can drop in links right there for like reference material. And it's just really, really handy. Let's see.
You guys remember the Terminator when he would like look at stuff?
Yeah.
And like, oh, he would have like all that sidebar in his vision.
Yes.
That's what I have when I look around my shop. Mostly just says, put that away. Clean that up. Put that away. Sweep that floor.
I could just see that. Like a little heads-up display pop up in front of Jimmy's glasses and everything like lights up and then little dots come up that say, don't want to deal with it. Beep. Don't want to deal with it. Beep.
There's always tomorrow.
Out of the way. Beep. Yeah, there's always tomorrow. Nice.
As video makers, are we all using Final Cut Pro or iMovie?
I use iMovie, but I also use Final Cut Pro once in a while, but mostly iMovie. Like 90% of my movies have been on iMovie.
I've been using Final Cut Pro. A year ago, I was thinking about switching to DaVinci Resolve because of its color correction, and I started to learn that, and I realized I am so fast at Final Cut Pro, like it would take something drastic for me to give it up because I'm so efficient with it.
We kind of did the same thing with Premiere. Like I'd heard a bunch of good stuff about Premiere, and I tried it years back, and so we decided to give it a shot. We did like one or two videos in it, and it was slow, and it crashed all the time, and it was just like, I didn't know where anything was. Yeah, so we went back to Final Cut. Speaking of coloring in Final Cut, though, and I think I've shown you this, but maybe not everybody who's listening, we use a plugin a coloring plugin for Final Cut called X-Rite. Mm-hmm. And I have a little physical color card that I take when, so when I'm shooting, I hold this card up to my camera and get it on screen. And then in the software, oh yeah, you've got it. It's like the X-Rite passport. Yep, that's it. Yeah. And so on the screen, you draw a little, in Final Cut, you draw a little square around this card on the screen, and it knows the colors that are supposed to be there. It knows the value. So it kind of like auto baselines all of the color on the screen for every shot. And it saves so much time. It doesn't fully color everything, but it gets every shot consistent with each other, you know, which is great. So, and it's not super cheap, but depending on how important color correction is to you, it can be worthwhile pretty quickly.
That's what I used to do. And recently I use everything that I do is internal within Final Cut. I've made sure that my lighting, they're all the same bulbs throughout the entire shop. I've done my very best to even out the lighting. So my camera is in full manual as far as white balance and exposure and shutter and all that. So it should be the exact same throughout my entire shop. And I have a little preset in Final Cut that it boosts my highs just a little bit. And it just gives me a little bit more contrast and then just a slight little color grade. And I just apply that to every single clip. And then I have a compression for the audio that I just apply to every single clip, and it makes life a lot easier.
We have that too. And the thing that we were finding, that the reason that kind of only went so far, there's one corner of my shop where I have a bunch of pieces of teak on a shelf above, it's like right up against a wall above the bandsaw, and teak is very orange. And so we kept noticing that every time I was shooting anything on the bandsaw, it had, the light had an orange tint to it, even though it had manual white balance, manual, all the lights are the same color, temperature, everything. But certain shots were getting reflected light that was colorized by what it was reflecting off of. And so that's when we decided to try this, the color correction stuff. And it did help get rid of that bounce, because that's really all it is, just bounce off of stuff. But it, you know, that's really dependent on your shop and like what you have in it, what light's going to be coming off of, and if you care, because a lot of people don't care.
It's getting pretty nerdy. None of that means that you're going to have a great video. You know, it's the contrast.
Sure. Yeah, I don't get, honestly, you guys have like been talking way over my head for the last 2 minutes. I don't get involved in any of that stuff. I just try and make sure that the color is as close as it is to like what I'm looking at, you know, as far as the camera picking it up. Mm-hmm. Sometimes, you know, if it's not on auto, if it's on one particular setting, like obviously when you go in the sun, I always set it, I get it off auto, I put it in sunlight temperature, and I forget to turn it off when I'm inside the garage. So once in a while, like the first couple shots will be orange or whatever the bad temperature is. And then also with the GoPro, you got to be careful too. When you turn on a GoPro inside, you got to let it acclimate to the color temperature of the room. So if you begin a shot and you start right away, the first 3 seconds of your shot will be orange or whatever weird color, and then you see it slowly acclimate to the color of the room.
I didn't know.
Turn on a GoPro inside, you got to wait a few minutes. I mean, I have it on auto, so you got to wait, you know, 10 seconds. I've become accustomed to this technique of filming. I'm like, okay, in 3 minutes, I'm going to film over this. So let me just turn the camera on now, so I don't forget. Because I have this habit of like composing the shot and then going right to work and never turning the camera on. I do that when I'm alone all the time. And so I'm constantly, you'll never see it in the edit, but I'm always like coming out from being in front of the camera and checking to make sure that the record button is on. Because I turn all those indications off on the front of any camera, or I even cover them with tape. So I have this habit now, like if I'm walking up to a scenario for the vlog, for instance, where I do like a lot of men on the street, I'll turn the camera on in my pocket. And if I'm going to talk to somebody, I'm like, hey, do you mind if we have a conversation? No, no problem. And then I pull the camera out of my pocket and it's already running.
Good tip.
That's to avoid not turning it on in the heat of the moment when like, oh, yeah, let's have a conversation. And I'm like, wait, I don't want to screw this interview up. And then I forget to hit record on my Canon G7X, for instance. So if I open it up, I look at it, I turn the record button on, and I just hold it from the edges so I don't accidentally cover my finger over the microphone, or so that I don't accidentally turn any of the buttons to a different setting. Because the Canon is a great camera, but it's such a pain in the ass. It's got all kinds of buttons to touch and accidentally turn off.
Nice.
You guys want to quickly go over website software? Do you use any kind of services or platforms?
Yeah, I use a bunch. Most recently, I've started using ConvertKit, and I think you have used them too, yes. David, right? Yeah. It's an email list software, and I will say that it's very expensive. That's like the big thing that I keep going back and forth on is, like, it's very expensive. And I, you know, I'm not sure there, but right now it has some really cool features, and it's really well done software for sure. I've been using that for my web store. I use WooCommerce, which is free. You have to pay for a lot of the add-ons that make it super useful, but it is very useful and it works very well. And let's see, what else? What about you? Do you have any?
I was going to say, basically, same thing you're using. I was a Drupal developer for 10 years, and for a long time, my site was in Drupal, but the store didn't have all my needs. So for a while, I had two sites. I had a Drupal site for the main site, and then a WooCommerce WordPress site for the store. And then just a couple months ago, I combined them into one. So now it's a complete WordPress site, which it hurts me a little bit on the inside. but it works great. And I'm using ConvertKit. It is a little expensive, but it's way better than MailChimp and anything else that I've used. I'm looking through my tabs here. I think that's it. Jimmy, what's your website platform?
Google?
Google?
I knew it.
I don't know. I use Squarespace.
Squarespace, yeah.
My buddy Doug does it for me. Doug Yeager, him and his wife, Sloan, they have a branding company together, and he updates me every few months. He looks at it and goes, "This looks like garbage. We have to update this." And so he'll invite me over. We'll have dinner, and he'll go through and do it. And now I haven't officially announced this, but I'm starting a product company with a partner, and we have an interesting name. I don't want to say exactly just yet what it is, but
Products Are Us. Did I get it?
Products Are Us, something like that.
Yes.
And we're going to actually kind of go into second and third gear on some of my products. He's going to help me with money. He's going to help me with organization. He says, you just come up with ideas. He goes, and right now you're fumbling through life trying to actually make these products and trying to get them out to market. He goes, let's formalize this. I'll do everything that you're not good at, and plus I'll help you pay for stuff so that we can both make money.
That's really important.
We're going to try and do licensing. If my name means anything, we're going to try and license to some people. I see the product company as my YouTube being an incubator for my product company, meaning that I'll sell to my fans if they want to support me and if I want to make cool stuff for, you know, reasonable prices. But I'm going to incubate stuff with the fans and with the community. But the real goal is to get something out there that it doesn't matter what my name is. People want it because it's a cool product. So that's the idea. It's like if I come up with like a sexy version of a hammer or a wrench or, you know, the ice pick obviously is something. But I want to try and re-engineer a couple of everyday projects. You know, for instance, the one I just showed you guys. You know, with a little bit of a cool factor, a little bit of like kind of a hipster factor. And then possibly manufacture them on a larger scale.
That's awesome.
Just out, you know, outside the community. So he's really globally minded, and my partner, and so he's educating himself on a lot of this stuff, and he's been a very successful businessman, and we've been friends for a long time, and he said, let's figure out how to formalize this conversation. So that's what we've been doing.
Maybe this is another topic for a future episode, is how much do you focus into what you're doing now, and how much focus do you put into the future? And putting eggs in other baskets.
I like that. We should definitely talk about that.
All right.
Well, you know what's funny? I've been a product guy since I graduated school. It's all I've ever done is develop toy products. And now, like for instance, the Pen Man, which isn't any great shakes. It's one of the first injection molds we're going to make. That's not such a revolutionary idea. I made that in like 92. I was trying to sell that concept of the Pen Man, like a guy with arms and legs. I made all these stupid everyday characters that were everyday objects. Like I had this thing called the Mr. Licks, and it was like a little molded body, and you stick a lollipop in it, and the head becomes a lollipop you eat, and then you stand it up. I had the patent for 17 years on a lollipop stand that was a figure. So you have kids, and did your kids eat lollipops and just drop them on the ground?
I have to go around and pick them up. Yeah.
Yeah. So if they had a little Mr. Lick stand, the head would be the body, the lollipop would be the head, and then the body is just a little plastic injection molded thing, like a 5-cent thing, but happens to be in the shape of a stick figure with big wide feet. So when you sit it down, it doesn't flop all over. So yeah. I was putting feet and arms on like everything, coffee cups, and all my friends were like, enough already with the hands and feet. I was finding other products that had hands and like dolls and like Mickey Mouse and cutting his hands off and gluing his hands onto like coffee cups and stuff. So I was doing that in the early 90s. But now with this platform of YouTube and now I have fans, I'm like revisiting all these toy ideas. I came up with this idea for like a – you guys remember when the Sharpie came out, the push-button Sharpie like 10 years ago, like 15 mm-hmm. years ago? Just around that time before then, I came up with a really cool magic marker where the cap opens up in a very interesting way. And it's like you don't have to remember to stick it on the back of the marker. So you pull the cap off and you're able to store the cap on the marker. They never come apart. So that if you're a parent and you have Crayola markers, the cap, like at the end of the day, there's three caps missing. There's absolutely, yeah. It's like, you know, there's never the same pair of socks. And you put three pairs in, you get two singles out. You know, you don't know how it happens. Same thing with magic markers. And the idea, like even me, I'm 50 years old and I still find like capless markers at the end of a workday. I'm like, I have no idea where the cap is. I'll clean the shop in a year from now. I still never find that cap on the top of that Sharpie that's been missing since that day. I just throw the marker away because I know it's going to dry out. Anyway, long story short, this is an old product I came up with 25 years ago. I'm actually going to redevelop it now for this market now. And I'm going to make a video of me doing the breadboard of it. And my buddy might engineer it and we might manufacture it. So I'm going to try and do more and more of that.
That's really awesome.
That was a long answer to what web browser do you use? The point I'm making is hopefully it's not going to be my problem anymore. I don't have to worry about it.
Yeah. Well, that's really important. I mean, to get to a place where you can focus on the things that you are really good at, the things that only you can do, and let somebody else do the other stuff. Websites are often that thing for a lot of people. David and I both just happen to come from a place where that was a thing we did, so it's pretty natural for us to make our own. But most people don't want to have to mess with the website, but you need one. So if you can find somebody to do that part for you, go for it, man. It's awesome. I'm looking for somebody to help take over a lot of the work on my site because it's just, I can do it. That doesn't mean I want to. Right. I would rather be putting that same amount of time into other stuff. But, you know, anyway, we've talked for a long time about this stuff. You guys got anything else?
No, I think Bob wants to turn his air conditioner back on, so we better.
I do. It's like 80, me too. It's like 87 degrees in here. What are we watching?
So this is this cool channel called Techmoan, and I love it. This guy reviews like 70s and 80s technology, like radios and turntables and like futuristic turntables. Like they would take, you can put 6 records into it, and it has a carousel and just all kinds of boom boxes and really, really awesome reviews of nostalgic 70s and 80s electronics. Love it.
Sweet.
Very cool. I'm going to talk about Grand Illusion. And the funny thing about Grand Illusion is a website where Tim, who I know from 25 years ago, toy business, every year when the New York Toy Fair would get together, there'd be guys from all around the world that would always meet once a year. And Tim is from Great Britain. And he has the biggest, I think he actually has a world record, the biggest collection of toys and novelties. And he started a YouTube channel a few years ago where he'll talk about a subject like novelties that have like miniature umbrellas in them or novelties with magnets. He's got so many toys and categories of inventions and mechanisms and novelties. You know, he'll do rubber toys that squeak and he'll do a whole video about 15 different rubber toys, but they all have something interesting and unusual about them. And it's amazing. Check out Grand Illusions. It's great for the inventive mind like mine, where you want to try and come up with new toy ideas, because he'll review 30 mechanisms and you'll look at all those mechanisms and he just talks about them. And it's so funny. I used to hang out with him every toy fair. We'd sit at dinner and he'd bring a huge bag and he'd bring out 40, 50 different mechanisms that he collected that year around the world. He travels all around the world and puts them together. So, Grand Illusion. It's
that
great.
Looks pretty
great.
Awesome.
And he's a good dude, too. He's very, very inquisitive and a real intellectual mind. If you ever got a chance to meet him, he's a super nice guy. He'll talk about toys, inventions for 10 hours and never stop.
Awesome. So mine is actually two videos, but it's a collaboration. I've talked about William Osman before, and we all know Peter Brown, but they did two videos together. And William made a zoetrope where you flash the light at a spinning thing. Remember when we were last year, we were at Pier 9, the Instructables place, and they had this spinning sculpture with a light flashing on it, and it looked like an artichoke as it was spinning, but it changed shape because they were changing the speed of the light that was flashing while this thing was turning, whatever. So anyway, this video is really cool. Oh, there's two videos, but it's really cool. They use Peter's lathe for the spinning, and they put an artichoke on it, and they try a bunch of other things, and they're both funny and good guys, and so, yeah, you should definitely go check it out, both of them.
It works like a timing belt light gun.
Oh, yeah.
Strobe light.
Good point. Yep. That would be it. I want to thank our Patreon supporters. We have new supporters this week, which is really cool.
Tell me.
Especially Wise Old Dal, Jedediah Schultz, Make Build Modify, and this week we're adding Evan and Caitlin, who I mentioned on the show a while back.
Yeah.
They're awesome. Follow them on Instagram.
Yeah, they're great. I've been really enjoying their videos lately. Good stuff. So them and everybody else who supports us on Patreon, we really appreciate it. It's awesome that we can get together and do this every week, and like we have enough support to make this a priority in our extremely busy lives. So thank you guys for that.
Thank you.
And if you want to help out, you can go to patreon.com/makingit. That would be super cool. You guys got anything else?
There's an interesting conversation with me and my mom.
Oh, yeah. I haven't watched that yet.
Yeah. And for the patrons, there's a 13-minute version of me and my mom talking. So my patrons, if you guys are all curious. But I've been getting a lot of feedback from people really enjoying my mom. My mom's got really good comic timing that she doesn't get to display very much. So if you guys want to laugh, just watch my mother tell a story about me swallowing tools in my dad's workshop when I was a kid.
Good story.
Go watch that right now.
That's it.
Awesome. Cool. Thanks for listening, everybody. We'll see you next week.
I love my mom.
Aww.
Aww.